WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this archive edition, we have an interview with country music star George Jones. Waylon Jennings once said, if we could all sound like we wanted to, we'd all sound like George Jones. Rock stars like Elvis Costello and Keith Richards have also paid tribute to Jones. There's a new collection of his recordings from the 60s called the George Jones Collection, the United Artists Years, on Razor and Tie. It includes his first big hit, She Thinks I Still Care, recorded in 1962.
Because I ask a friend about her, just because I spoke her name somewhere, just because I rang her number by mistake today, she thinks I still care.
George Jones tells his personal story in his autobiography, which has just been published in paperback. He describes the many years he was addicted to alcohol and cocaine, and he gives his perspective on his celebrated but troubled marriage to Tammy Wynette. Jones grew up in rural Texas during the Depression. His father made bootleg whiskey to help make ends meet. George Jones first performed at the age of 9 in Pentecostal churches and revival meetings. After helping to save souls, in his early teens he played to the sinners at rough-and-tumble roadhouses. He was underage, but he worked with a married couple who served as his guardians. Jones says fights often broke out while the band played.
Back in those late 40s, when I was appearing in these places with them, you know, we had to put chicken wire around the bandstand, the little stage we had, to keep bottles from flying over and busting our guitars up. It would be brawls break out every hour or so. But we got through it. It was part of the training, I guess.
Were those bottles intended for the band, or were they just accidentally
really
hitting you?
Not really. There's one or two that get in a fight and start something, and then get knocked into another one, and he'd get mad, and he'd join in fighting them. So next thing you know, is a dozen fighting, and tables turning over, and bottles are flying, throwing in, at each other, you know, and they'd naturally head that way, too, you know.
So when there was fighting when you were playing, would you just keep playing?
Well, we were told to do that, and that's what we'd done most of the time, until, you know, it got really too rough to continue, and then we'd quietly bow out and get out of the way.
Let's see, you were married at age 17, divorced a little less than a year later, I think, went into the Marines for a couple of years. How soon did you start recording when you got out of the Marines? And I guess it was 1954.
Right away, in that following February of 54, I went into the studio the first time, and we didn't do all that good until 56, I think, or 55. We lucked up with a tune called Why, Baby, Why, and then we moved on to Nashville to a larger company that could distribute, you know, records better.
Well, why don't we hear Why, Baby, Why, recorded in 1955. One of the things interesting about this is that I think really you're best known for your ballads. And this is really up-tempo.
Well, the first days were rough, you know. The early days, we recorded for Starday Records, and really it was terrible sound. We recorded in a small living room of a house on the highway near Beaumont. You could hear the trucks. We had to stop a lot of times because it wasn't soundproof. It was just egg crates nailed on the wall, and the big old semi-trucks would go by and make a lot of noise, and we'd have to start over again.
So George Jones, let's hear your first hit, recorded in 1955, Why, Baby, Why.
Tell me why, baby, why, baby, why, baby, why you make me cry, baby, cry, baby, cry, baby, cry. I can't help but love you till the day that I die. So tell me why, baby, ah, baby, why? Well, now I've got a crow I wanna pick with you, just like last time when the feathers flew. You're running wild, kicking up your heels, leaving me home with a handful of bills. Well, I can't live without you, and you know it's true, but there's no living with you, so what'll I do? I'm going honky-tonk and get as tight as I can, and maybe by then you'll appreciate a good man. Tell me why, baby, ah, baby, why you make me cry, baby, cry, baby, cry, baby, cry.
That's George Jones, his first hit back in 1955. George Jones, how did this record affect your life? How did it change your life?
Well, it gave me a little more to eat and got me to traveling around, driving my car and to places close to East Texas, the big cities, Houston, Dallas, and over into Louisiana, sometimes Oklahoma. And it was a local hit for me. It was a national hit for Red Sevine and Webb Pierce, which back at that time, Webb Pierce was about the number one big star that was recording at the time.
Now, how did you get the reputation as No Show Jones, of not showing up for dates?
Well, that was easy as time went by. No, I just I missed a few dates back when I was doing a little bit too much of my drinking, and later on I got into drugs but I didn't really miss as many dates as it's been built up to be, but a lot of things the fans and people didn't know that the management that I had around me at the time were also booking dates on me several dates on the same date and getting advanced monies for the dates. And they knew I would get the blame, you know, for it. And that they would never have to refund those monies. So I wound up with so many lawsuits that I didn't know what to do with. So that's why I had all those problems with the lawsuits, and finally got it all straightened out, though, thank goodness, and we don't have to worry about all that anymore.
Right. You went through many years of drinking to excess and then some years of doing cocaine as well. I imagine there was a long period during which when you performed, you were often very drunk. How did that affect your performance?
Well, I thought it made me do a good job, but I found out later I didn't sound as good as I thought I did, you know. No, but really, to be honest with you, I did drink performing, but I didn't usually go to excess with it until after the shows. Usually after the shows is when I stayed up picking in the rooms and stuff like that and partying and running my health and all the other things that came, you know, with it.
Did you have blackouts?
Well, I did a lot of passing out. I don't know about blackouts.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Would you get worried when you'd come back to regain consciousness after passing out and just wonder, what did I do that I've forgotten?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, many times. You don't realize the things you have done, and then when people start telling you some of the things you've done, you didn't want to hear it, and instead of straightening up then you'd go right back and do the same things again. So I don't know what makes people do that, but thank God we found out about it and got a little sense before it was too late.
Actually, it strikes me as being particularly dangerous when you're famous, because there's always people out to get you when you're famous. They could make up things that you did while you were drinking, and you wouldn't be able to know one way or another whether you did it or not, because you'd blacked out.
Well, you know, the things you actually do is bad enough. It's the things that people around
right.
you, they build it up and make it worse. So that's one reason I wanted to write the book, and there's been a couple of other books out on me that's been written from just hearsay and mountains built out of molehills, and I just wanted to set the record straight, and that's one of the reasons that I went ahead and with Tom Carter and wrote the book. And some of the things they claimed I'd done was even worse when I get through telling it. But so many of the things, though, that I didn't do, that I just like to let everybody know my side of it.
Let's hear another one of your songs. And this is These Days I Barely Get By, which was co-written by you and by Tammy Wynette. And I think you recorded this shortly before or shortly after you separated.
I think so.
Do you remember which it was?
No,
shortly after.
But I'm sure it was just before we separated and got divorced.
Tell me what your life was like when you recorded this.
Well, it was already getting to one of the lowest points in my life from drinking so much. And this was what led to a lot to the cause of the divorce. And so you know most of the story after that.
Okay, well, this is These Days I Barely Get By, sung by my guest George Jones.
I woke up this morning aching with pain. Don't think I can work, but I'll try. The car's in the shop, so I thumbed all the way. Oh, these days I barely get by. I walked home from work and it rained all the way. My wife left and didn't say why. She laid all our bills on the desk in the hall of these.
George Jones, recorded in the mid-70s. I'm wondering, if you're truly living the lyric that you're singing about, do you think that that helps you make it even more expressive?
The song, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I certainly do. I know when I'm singing a song on stage or recording one in the studio, I have to get deeply involved in it. And if not, you can't put the emotions and the feelings, and I don't think they come out if you don't.
My guest is George Jones. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with country singer George Jones. Let me play the song that you say turned your life around. And this is He Stopped Loving Her Today. Tell me, before we get to how this song changed your life, what was your life like when you recorded it?
Well, it was getting better. I had came out of rehab, and I was doing a lot better, and I went in and recorded the song that I carried it about a year before while I was all messed up, and it just turned my life around. It was the biggest record that I'd ever recorded in all my recording years. And you know, they say good things happen when you try to do good things, you know. And maybe the good Lord, when I straightened up, he was kind of thanking me for it.
Now, you had the song for about a year before recording it, and you asked the songwriter to rewrite it several times. What was the original song like? How is it different from what you recorded, and why did you think it needed to be changed?
Well, when I first got the song and first heard it, it didn't have the last verse of the recitation part. It didn't have that part for the... I kept telling them that the lady had to come back, you know. The girl had to come back one way or the other, either to see him or come to his funeral or something. And they went back and rewrote and wrote the last verse then, that where I do the recitation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you still sing
this? That was when she came to the funeral, you know.
Do you still sing the song a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, recorded in 1980. This is George Jones, He Stopped Loving Her Today.
He stopped loving her today. They placed a wreath upon his door.
oxen they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today. You know, she came to see him one last time. Oh, and we all wondered if she would. And it kept running through my mind. This time, he's over her for good. He stopped loving her today. It played. Soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today.
That's my guest, George Jones. He's written a new autobiography called George Jones, I Lived to Tell It All. How did you finally give up drinking?
Well, first of all, I went in rehab, and I went back during the first couple of years, you know, four or five times, just for a couple of days at a time. You know, when these things would come back on you, you'd get your sickness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this was about the time that I had met Nancy, and, of course, I was getting all the good help that she could offer.
She's your wife. And,
right. And all of a sudden, one day, you know, it was just over with, you know. And so that's been, I'd say, I'm guessing around 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like the first time you sang on stage without drinking?
Well, it was rough. I'd have to say that. It was rough, and after it was rough for about the first couple of 3 weeks. And then each night, you know, I got more used to it, and it was, I was forgetting that I thought I might need it or something like that. And in other words, we fought it, and we got through the worst part of it, and then those nights were over.
What's it like to sing drinking songs now? Do they have a different meaning to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, life itself is different, you know. I thought I lived in a science fiction movie or something, all them bad years, but no, it's, I wake up and now, you know, and enjoy the farm, enjoy the horses I got, and just have a great time knowing your family and knowing things you never did know before, you know, and realizing what you got and what you're thankful for.
Now, have you ever always taken your voice for granted? I mean, here's what I mean. It came so naturally to you. You never seem to have had to work at singing. You just had this gift. And sometimes when people just have something, they don't realize how special it is.
Well, a lot of times you can't see the forest for the trees. We don't wake up when we ought to sometimes, if you know what I mean. And I never did take it all that serious. The only thing I took serious was I loved to do it, and the people liked to hear it, and that's my happiest times is when I was on stage, and they seemed to be enjoying it. That made me enjoy being there.
Mm-hmm. Did you think of your voice as a gift? I mean, do you think
naturally.
Of it as a gift?
Uh-huh. Naturally, it's. I think there's only a few every now and then that come along that are lucky enough to have the little different sound and in their voice and the drive and the heart, the soul, whatever you want to call it. It's just a little something different that we're blessed with, you know.
It seems to me that for a good part of your career, maybe I'm wrong here, that you didn't much like giving interviews or really, you know, thinking out loud about yourself and your life.
Yeah, I was awful shy when I was growing up, and I didn't like interviews, and I didn't like to be in crowds unless I was on stage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of a loner or shy, whatever you want to say. back in those days, and I just really didn't like giving interviews because I didn't think I could talk, you know, right, and I still think I don't today. I don't know. Just back in those days, I was shy, and I didn't know what to say. You know, I was afraid they would ask me things that I wouldn't know how to answer. So I was really scared more than anything.
And you're comfortable with yourself now?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
George Jones' autobiography has just been published in paperback. Our interview was recorded last year when the book was first published. And Razor and Tie Records has just released a reissue of his recordings from the 60s called She Thinks I Still Care, The George Jones Collection.